Making a career change is always daunting, but for those with a psychology background, transitioning into user experience research can be a natural fit. With their skills in understanding human behavior and conducting scientific research, psychologists have a strong foundation to build upon for a role in UX. In this episode, we sit with Sianna Williams, a UX researcher at Microsoft, who also doubles as a GIS expert, with community building being a major ingredient in her success. Whether you're a recent psychology grad or a seasoned mental health professional looking for a change, you will learn how to get started in successfully switching from psychology to the exciting field of UX research. Enjoy today's episode. This episode is brought to you by Big Spark. Big Spark is the UK's fastest growing data solutions consultancy, translating your business needs into data architecture, strategy, and engineering. Together with their technical partners, they focus on swift and efficient business value delivery. Taking an innovative approach to every challenge, Big Spark is an agile team of over 100 world-class engineers and data scientists pushing the boundaries of what can be achieved with AI, data, software, cloud, and machine learning. To find out how Big Spark can ignite your data solution, visit us at www.bigspark.dev. Big Spark, igniting change through engineering. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the TechSurf podcast, where we navigate today's tech wave one electrifying conversation at a time. I am your host, Raymond Cluche. And today we have a brilliant lady in the tech space who is going to share her experience with us in terms of how she's pivoted careers from one career that is not very much a techie-based career. But I would say we tend to, use it, we tend to use it a lot, in tech, but we don't use it overtly. Today I have with me Sianna Lena Williams. I hope I got the name right. And she is here to, have a great conversation with us. So Sianna, thank you so much for accepting to join the TechSurf podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Raymond.
Perfect. So I hope I got the name right. Sianna, right?
Yeah, that's correct.
Perfect. Okay. All right. So we just want you to first, quickly introduce yourself, who you are, what you do, your background, and then we can get into the juice of today's conversation.
This question always leaves me a bit confused because I don't know whether to go a bit personal or to go a bit more professional, but I'll try to mix both.
Well, TechSurf podcast, we like it all. So just be yourself.
Sure. Okay. Thanks. Yeah. So I'm Ghanaian, first of all. And I come from a background of geography and resource development with psychology from the University of Ghana, Legon. And I have worked in quite a number of spaces that have led me to where I am today. So worked in a GIS and software development company. I've worked in a traditional food and beverages company where I try to apply GIS. And I'm currently with Microsoft Norway, where I currently work as a UX researcher. So I'll say my journey has been a mixture of tech, GIS, and self-development to some extent. Right.
That's quite interesting. So when I saw your background, I was like, wow, that is a lot. Psychology, geography, resource development. Before we delve further, was that always what you wanted to read? Or you would say that the educational system in Ghana just happened to have given that to you and you just found yourself doing that?
Yeah, that happens a lot, doesn't it? I did find a couple of my classmates in university who were unfortunately not given the opportunity to do medical school, go to medical school. So they just ended up coming to geography or another arts course. But on my part, I intentionally chose that course at the surprise of my mom. I insisted that I wanted to do geography. I've been interested in National Geographic Channel since I was a kid and interested in everything geography. So that kind of made it very obvious what I'll do. But I did not have an end goal in plan. An end goal in mind of what I wanted to use it for. So I was just going with the wave. This is what I feel I like. So I just went ahead and did it.
Oh, wow, that's nice. I did used to watch National Geographic, like those videos of, you know, like animals, you know, in the forest and all that kind of stuff. I did read science and geography, to be fair, in senior high school. Yes, I know. It's quite, I did do a bit of, you know, I remember a bit of geography, the batholith and those kind of stuff. Yes, I do remember that. But I just knew that that was where it was going to end. I wasn't going to go further with it after senior high school.
Yeah, a lot of people dropped it.
Yes. So for me, I always just found it very intriguing how people just, you know, wanted to study geography. Because in my mind, the end goal for a geographer was to become a teacher to become very much maybe doing what we saw on TV with the animals, and just like research. Yeah. But knowing very well that in terms of our country, in terms of, you know, remuneration, which is a very huge topic there, people like geography, I'm wondering how much it's going to pay, you know, and how people can have a sustained life apart from teaching in geography. But that's quite interesting. Okay, so you finished geography, right? And you are doing a GIS course. I had an episode with someone who also pivoted into tech through his GIS course. Would you say that transition into tech started from that GIS course when you were doing geography and psychology and resource development in the University of Ghana?
Well, I will say it was a delight in the course. Okay. So when I started doing geography, I did not even, I always think like you, like, am I going to be a teacher? I was so shy. I was like, okay, I can't do that. So I need to really figure out what I need to do before I end school. Because I wanted to get paid very well. But then, in my third year, that was when I found the tech aspect of geography. That was GIS. So that was what kind of opened the doors for me. And I've always been interested in tech since I was a kid. So having to do more research into the field made me see the possibilities that, okay, I'm not going to suffer after school. I might be able to get a job and actually get paid. And that made me start getting more intrigued. I mean, the hungry part of me not wanting to sit at home after national service made me start like being more serious about reaching out to people, reading more about companies who do things around GIS to kind of understand a bit more about the industry and also just talk to people. So that led me to my first internship with a GIS and software company that was a startup in Ghana. It was a mix, should I say, of GIS and tech. So that was what helped me to also get involved in the tech field as well. So over there, as you know, startups, you wear numerous hats, which I did. If you check my LinkedIn, you'll see one particular company having so many roles for me, but just within like a year. Wow. And that was what I did. So I worked as a GIS technician. I was a data analyst. I was I was even a PA at a point. And I think the biggest part of my work there was being a PM. So being a program manager for some of the solutions that we came up with. So that kind of opened doors for me in terms of tech. And when I found an opportunity to learn a bit more about coding, I just grabbed it, and that further opened the door for me to tech.
That's nice. Okay, so let's delve a bit more into UX research. GIS, I know it has to do with, you know, maps and, you know, all that kind of stuff that we all benefit from. For those of you who do not really know the foundations of Google Maps and Apple Maps, you know, it's very much what Sienna was doing, how to make, you know, maps more realistic, how to, you know, have better navigation on planet Earth. Then UX, you know, UI UX, I am like, okay. How did you get there? I'm just so intrigued, because I'm not saying both of them may not necessarily have similar, you know, features of, you know, having a better user experience. And even you also know even more about even the graphics, but more of the experience bit of it. So just walk us through how you found yourself into UX.
Oh, that story. That story is just amazing. Like, so this actually happened kind of by chance to some extent. I kind of stumbled upon it. I did I don't know how far back to go, but it took me 2 years to actually get a job with Microsoft and actually be able to relocate to a country that they had an office in. And in that 2 years, a lot of things happened and my role got changed. So the next role that I had to apply for was the UX research role. So during that application, I had to leverage on the psychology bit, my psychology background, to kind of make myself more, should I say, qualified for the role. So it took it definitely did change my plans a bit, but I've come to really learn a lot from this field. And yeah, I feel like a lot of people with my kind of background can actually do this field, can actually do this work as well.
So UX research, what does that look like? I'm just curious. Is it getting customer feedback or getting to know that, okay, we are no longer doing round corners, we are now doing square corners for buttons.
The
Exactly. Or what? I'm just curious, what does that entail? Maybe just run us through a typical day, like your typical day as a re as a U UX researcher.
Yeah, so UX research, you actually work in every, should I say, stage of product development. So trying to help build the right thing and build the thing right, it's kind of like a slogan that is among UX folks. And in doing that, you start from the foundation, and that comes from you as a should I say, a company trying to figure out exactly what product you want to develop. So it starts first from research. I mean, you can't start anything without research. So if you have a researcher, UX researcher, that person goes out to actually gather data in terms of maybe already existing products, or my favorite, that's the jobs to be done. So what is the foundational job to be done that a customer wants to do in relation to a product? So take, for instance, mobile phones. As you've seen the evolution of mobile phones. The basic usage of a mobile phone, that's the job to be done, that is to make a call from one place to another without having to be physically there, is still being achieved today. No matter how the device changes, the job to be done is still the same. So if you want to create a product that is related to this, you will need a UX researcher who have to go out there to kind of basically understand what job to be done people want to get done, and what are the needs currently, what are the challenges they are currently having with the already existing products, and what do they want to change about that and improve. So you need to first start from that, then that's when you get the idea of what products you can actually produce or create. And then from there, you can move on to the next stage of the design process, where you can create prototypes and then create your first draft. And then again, you need a researcher to help you assess that with customers to get to know, okay, this is a good mobile phone. The features are very basic and all that, and the should I say the MVP, that's the most viable, should I say, product, that the basic functionality of a product is working. What else would people like to add to it to make it more, should I say, convenient or worth the buy? So you need a researcher to actually take you through that whole process of design process, to go through the iterative process of prototyping, testing, changing, and reassessing. And then go after you have even launched your product, you still need research again to assess how well your product is doing and how it is achieving customer success. So you
A bit of A/B testing
A/B
and all
testing, exactly.
that.
You need a researcher to help you with that. It can be a data scientist as well, but researchers are more equipped to handle the qualitative in addition to the quantitative side. So we do a bit of almost everything. Like, we are part of every stage of the development process, and we work very closely with every single person in the tech field. We work closely with PMs, we work closely with software developers, we work closely with especially designers and also leadership, because we need to share our insights to show how well maybe the market is doing and how it reacts to our product. So research is, should I say, the foundation of product development, let me say.
Right, that's quite interesting. So let's talk about skills. How does one become a UX researcher? You read psychology, and I'm sure not everyone listening is going to get a psychology degree to become a researcher. Neither are they going to have to go through GIS. It could be me. I guess, you know, I'm done with data engineering. I get into UX research. If you could just walk us through maybe top five skills that you think one should look out for when they want to get into this field.
Yeah. That's a good question, honestly, because it's not a straight road, should I say. And I feel like no matter your background, you have something to bring to the table. Because as you can see, I'm from a GIS background with psychology. Like, nobody will ever think that I can do something in tech like this without a computer science degree. But coming in with a basic understanding of research methods is very helpful. So that's why when we're in school, a lot of the, should I say, lecturers, but like, you should do a long essay, because if you do a long essay, you learn how to do research methods. And in having that skill, you can basically do any research related course or any research related field of work. So I'll say having that basic understanding of research methods is very important, because that's what I still apply today. How to write a proposal, how to write your, should I say, assessment questions, survey questions, or interview questions, how to analyze them qualitatively and quantitatively, and how to present the data. So these are like some of the, should I say, practical skills you should have. In addition to that, you'd also need some basic understanding of design thinking and design process. So having that introduction to design thinking or an introduction to UX research, just from hearing the research aspect from the technical side or from the tech side, because the, should I say, research in academia is a bit different from research from the tech. I have a colleague who came in, she's a PhD, candidate, or should I say, actually she's a PhD holder, and she's coming from a pure academic background into UX research. And she had to kind of change some of the way she does her research, because how they do it in tech is a bit different. You have to be very fast paced, even though, yes, it will take you almost about 6 months to do research, but in the tech world, that time is not there. So you have to know how to kind of get your research done within a short possible time, and also to kind of relay the findings in a way that is going to impact the product directly. So data visualization is something you have to learn, how to present your data to your stakeholders. And also you need to have the basic, other basic skills, that is basic, should I say, soft skills. So organization, collaboration, should I say, leadership to some extent, because you will have to also, and also community building and management, because you will have to manage a lot of customer programs with and be the middleman between the product group and the customer group. How would you bring them together? How do you manage their schedules to meet so that you can actually talk to each other and get insights? And also, and that brings in the organization as well. And also in terms of the technical, as I mentioned, learning a bit of the design tools is very helpful. So Figma is like the most famous one, and other tools like Notion and which other one? Yeah, there are other like data analysis tools as well that you can learn and use that to help you with your work. And of course, AI is upcoming, so you have to learn how to use AI very proficiently in terms of the right prompts to use whilst you're doing your analysis. AI, well, should I say, ChatGPT can be very helpful, but you have to be mindful of confidentiality of data. So if your company does not want the data to go out, you either have to ask your company to provide you with a company certified AI tool, or you have to make the data very, very
anonymous
to be able to analyze it. So yeah, I think that's a bit of what you can learn to prepare yourself to be a UX researcher.
That's amazing. That's amazing. That is very, very, that was very, very helpful. I in fact, I think I can probably just take that and just get ready to get into UX. Now let's talk about the challenges. You know, every time people hear, oh, wow, someone has pivoted careers, people tend to make it seem very easy and like, oh my God. And now I did, like, you know, like, obviously, like the name or the caption of the of the podcast would be pivoting careers from psychology to UX researcher. It gives to that kind of, you know, very great vibe. But I'm sure the in between, the two bits, is one that people don't talk about a lot. So let's talk about, you know, the major challenges you faced in your transition moments into your current role.
To be honest, the challenges are still facing them.
I like that. Frank. Honesty.
Yes. It starts from the, should I say, unpredictability, and also, should I say, imposter syndrome.
Right.
Coming into a tech field that you do not do computer science, you don't really understand most of what they're talking about. That can kind of cause imposter syndrome. Also, identity crisis. I was talking to a friend of mine today that sometimes I feel like I am missing out on the GIS field, which was actually my passion. But I'm also finding UX research very interesting. But because my online presence is known to be GIS focused, it's making it a bit difficult for me to know what about me should I present to the world? What is my brand now? Because I was all about personal branding when I was in GIS.
I know. I mean, I used to see you alone with everything GIS.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you even have, I think you founded a few, you know, communities and you're part of a few communities. So we know you as the GIS champion.
Exactly. Yes. And I'm still into that. But right now I'm keeping it a bit low key because I still miss out on that industry. So keeping myself updated with that industry is a bit tough. So I'll say some of the challenges will be like trying to keep up with both industries. That is, if you are from two different industries and you still have the passion for both of them, trying to keep up with both industries can be a bit tough. And having to know what your identity is whilst you are in both industries. I try to merge it, which I'm still trying to do. Hopefully I'll get that done and figured out. But there are so many ways that you can go around that as well. Either you merge or you choose one, focus on that, and you still keep the one like a major and minor course in school. And trying to, navigate the new space. So one thing was when I entered the field, I did not know a lot of things about UX research. I knew research methods, I knew research, but I did not know UX research. So having to intentionally study, like read articles, watch videos around UX research. I had a designer on my team who was really good with UX research. So I used to shadow her when she's doing her work while she's coming up with ideas to assess and do research. And the fun thing about UX research is there are so many ways to do like research analysis and research assessments that like the sky is the limit. You can go really broad, make it really fun, and still get very valuable insights. So being open to learning from others, having mentorship was very helpful, and that was what I really needed to help me to kind of get that confidence. Because another thing is getting the confidence that yes, you are in the right role and you can do this work. Because sometimes if you don't take care, you can self-sabotage. Because I remember when I joined the first year, I felt like I was doing terrible. But I spoke to my manager and she was like, "Oh, I'm doing actually really well." And I was like, "No, this is not me. This is not my level." So I was self-sabotaging, which was something that I'm not saying everybody will go through, but you have to really become comfortable in the role and just open your mind to be like, just say, "I'm learning." Once you open your mind and say you are learning, it can remove a lot of these negativities from your mind. So yeah, those are some of the challenges.
Hello there, tech surfers. I have got some news for you. The Tech Surf Podcast is now on Instagram and LinkedIn. Follow us on Instagram at the Tech Surf Podcast and LinkedIn, the Tech Surf Podcast, to stay up to date on new episodes and to get interactive. Don't forget to like, share, and send us feedback on your favorite episodes and the lessons you've learned. See you soon. I like that. Now let's talk about Microsoft. You know, when I think about Microsoft, I think about Teams. I think about Microsoft Office. I think about PowerPoint. I think about typical Windows, you know. And one will say that most of the time, people who go and work at Microsoft are going towards, you know, typical software engineering route. So software engineer one, two, and so forth. I haven't really heard of Microsoft data scientists. Maybe they exist, like people like in my circle, most of the time is, or even data engineer, or even machine learning engineer, I've heard one or two. But then Microsoft UX research, Okay, you would want to maybe expand a little bit. How did you get in there? How did you get how did you get to know about the opportunity? And if maybe, I know because Microsoft is a company, you cannot give the details about what you do, but maybe just an idea of, you know, something you've worked on that was very interesting. No details, just maybe around the line, if you can. Yeah.
Oh yes, Microsoft has a lot of roles. Like, there were some roles I never knew even existed until I joined this company. So if you can think it, you can be it.
Right. Okay, that's nice.
So yeah, and what else should I say? Yes. Yeah, so to be honest, Microsoft came to Ghana a few years back. I was very lucky to be part of a community that was invited. So that was Developers in Vogue at the time, headed by Ivy Bali.
Right.
And I happened to be there. And I was actually not, in, like, I applied, but I did not really get in. I was put on the waiting list. And I decided to wait because they mentioned that after 8, they are going to open the doors. So I was like, okay, I'll wait. But then it started getting late. My parents were calling me to come home. The usual Ghanaian thing.
I know.
And then somebody told me that, no, I should wait. I've come here. I've waited long enough. I might as well just get in before I go.
Right.
So I decided to wait, and I happened to go in. And I just went. When I entered, there were so many Microsoft people, and there were specific Microsoft people that a lot of people were surrounded, like had surrounded. And I could tell those are like high level people in Microsoft. But I just went and walked towards one Microsoft guy who was talking to somebody from Ecobank. And I just stood there and I was just looking at them, just listening to their conversation. Then after he turned the conversation to me, and I just introduced myself, told them what I was working on. At the time, I was managing a product from the GIS and software company.
Right.
And I just explained it to him, showed him what I was working on. And then I told him some feedback I had about some Microsoft products, which of course was the maps. And that kind of caught his attention, I think, because he took my name down. And after a few weeks, I got an email that I had been invited to an interview. So I would say that was definitely God's favor. And definitely I thank a lot of people. I really thank God that I stayed. And even though I did get scolded when I got back home, but it was worth it.
Are happy now. It was worth it in the long run, right?
Exactly. They are happy. Right. So yeah, it all comes down to attending events and should I say networking. I always tell people, please attend events, please network with people. You don't need to be at an event to even network. You can reach out to somebody on LinkedIn, like how you reached out to me.
Right.
And people are always willing to give some of their time. You can request for like a 30 minutes time to just talk to them and have a plan of what you want to talk to them about. Go through their profile to see what the patterns are, maybe some similarities, or maybe you want to ask about their career. People love to talk about their work, not the nitty-gritty, but kind of a bit about what they do, and they also like to help. So if you come from that perspective, people will willingly talk to you. So yeah, that's should I say the foundation, or should I say the starting of the story of how I got into Microsoft. The rest, of course, is lots of interviews at 1 a.m. and 2 a.m. because the people interviewing me were in the US and the time zone differences. So and after 2 years, I was able to get this opportunity in Norway. So yeah, I think that summarizes my story.
Oh wow, that's nice. And how about the project? If you could, you know, any interesting thing you've worked on? Maybe you used to use Teams, but then you were kind of in the Teams project, and it changed your perspective about how software development is done.
Well, I have been using Microsoft products since I was a kid. So like since I got introduced to computers. So it was kind of surreal to be actually part of the product team. I don't work with any core Microsoft products. I work with a subset of some of the products that they have. So I focus more on people experiences. So all the people experiences that is within Microsoft. So seeing a person's profile photo, I don't work on that. I work with it on my colleague. But I work more on new projects, so I can't talk about that. But
That's fine.
more that has to do with people within Microsoft, all Microsoft products. I work with a team that handles that. So
that's nice. That's nice. Well, Microsoft is a huge brand, and to see a Ghanaian in there, and a lady for that matter, because I know it seems that tech is always skewed to the male gender, but I'm a huge advocate for, you know, letting people understand that there are ladies or that women who are in the tech space who are not only just, they're not serving coffee. They are not.
Thank you.
They are doing good stuff.
Yes, we need more people like you.
Exactly. Oh, I'm a huge advocate. So every time I see someone who, especially a lady, because my sister is an engineer, right?
Oh, nice.
We grew up in a home where I never had the sense of Raymond can do, so she cannot do.
Mm-hmm.
She actually even went down my dad's path. You know, my dad is a mechanical engineer, and my sister goes into FPSOs, goes into engines, all your other kind of stuff. The funny thing is, I cannot do that. but that's the beauty of it. My sister likes to look into the engine when my dad is trying to fix something, and really nice. You know, the jack and all that. Me, that's just too much. But that's, you know, different personalities and all. Yeah. So whenever I see, you know, people trying to, you know, break through every kind of glass ceiling, understand that. Opportunities should be given to women to do well and flourish.
Yes.
And excel at it. And let's not, you know, limit them to the stereotypes that have been created around, you know, tech. Because some of the smartest people I've even met in my life in the technical space are women. So our brothers are trying, but arise the brothers. We need to do better. You get it? Okay, now let's talk about, you know, let's go back into like UX. You know, I want you to share what aha moment you had in your decision into UX. So for example, like what was like a light bulb moment when you were like, oh wow, this UX thing is quite an intriguing thing. Was it one day maybe you were using a phone or something, you were like, no, I could correct this, or if I was probably on this team, I will make this better, you know? A bit of an aha moment you ever had before, whether before or during, even as a, you know, a UX researcher.
Oh yeah, that's a good question. The aha moment. This will take a while to see through my memory. But I would say, it had more to do with coming to terms with how relatable UX research is to geography. And I even did a presentation about this with my team that was looking at, as I'm doing my analysis, I do look at it from a locational perspective. So how do people from different cultures relate to our products? How would they potentially relate to upcoming products? How do they feel about already existing products and like related already existing products? So doing some of my research and seeing the cultural differences in my analysis made it very, very intriguing, and it made me feel like, okay, it's not so bad. I might have been out of geography, but geography is definitely not out of me. And it made me feel that, okay, I can definitely merge my two passions and make a new one out of it. So now I kind of see UX research from that lens, and I think that really helped me get that, should I say, calm, that, okay, I can do this. So I just need to look at this from my unique perspective, and it helps because it brings up the ideas, especially from our part of the world. As you know, Microsoft is mostly, should I say, focusing on, if you look at most of the adverts and all those things, it's usually Western-based. So sometimes I try to bring in perspectives of African users for them to see that, look, I know this works well in the Western world, but in the other parts of the world, we need to really think more about these products or these features, because something like when I joined, the teams, I don't know whether you've noticed, but teams had this thumbs up that actually looked like an insult. So when I joined,
I actually thought, like, in Ghana, if you show that to someone in a Ghana language.
Exactly.
Right.
Oh, so I rose that issue when I first joined in the meeting. I was like, this is an insult in my country. And I think that really struck my manager, because she had just started showing the importance of research to the team. So she, I don't know what happened, but by God's grace, they fixed it. So it's no longer doing that. And it made me further like press on and kind of insist that we need to listen to all perspectives, especially other parts of the world, because we are building global products. We can't leave anybody behind. And yeah, I think that was kind of like my aha moment to see the
Man,
similarities between geography and UX research.
a perfect intersection of research and your
Yeah.
everyday life. That is very great. You seem to have a very busy life because I know you are in a lot of communities. You've created some yourself. I wouldn't go into the details because in fact, your online presence speaks for itself. You know, you are in the GIS space. You are doing well, like developers in Vogue. I see you a lot. What do you do to, take a step, back and just breathe, just live life, unplug from the business? I used to have, or I'll say, I'm not doing so well at my work-life balance. So last week I took some time off, went to be with friends. I went for a conference, but then I added, some time with friends, and it was very refreshing. I wish I could do that every week online, but that's not life. But yeah, tell me, what do you do? What does it look like? What are the things you like to do? Your creative sides, you like to explore them.
Oh, this question. I get asked this, especially when I start talking about like all the things I'm doing. Then people are like, "What the heck do you do for fun?" And I'm like, "Yeah, that's a
I
good
know,
question."
right.
And moving to a new country has not been easy at all
At all.
because I'm in a country that is like me. Most of the people are like me. They keep to themselves.
Yes,
And how do
I
you
see.
socialize in Ghana?
Right.
Somebody, a random
Right.
stranger will come and talk to you.
At
Over
least
here,
I've even reached out to you for you to even
oh,
join
look at this.
the
Look at this. And over here, it's like I don't know the language, one, so I can't even relate to them on a social level in terms of their language. And also, they keep to themselves. They don't really like small talk. So having that social life is mostly centered around my office folks who are mostly from different countries. So it's like a UN over there. But we get to really engage with each other, and that helps. We try as much as possible. One thing I really like about Microsoft is that they really value time off. So coming from Ghana, I had to learn how to take time off. It was difficult. I did not know how to take time off, so I had to learn that. And now I had to fill the time off with activities, and that made me start looking at things I had wanted to do since when I was a kid. So if you want to look at ways to wind down, especially if you are new in the country, and let's say you just got out of, like, let's say you just moved out of your parents' home, you're on your own, you're working, try to revisit some of the things you wanted to do when you were a kid. So for me, I really wanted to travel, and I've been doing that once in a while when I get the chance. And also, I keep saying that I like to go out, but I need somebody to pull me out. So I have a friend that I usually go out with because she's a social one. So she'll call me, "Hey, Sienna, let's go shopping. Hey, Sienna, let's go here." Then I go with her. So trying to surround myself with people who will get me to move, and also trying to do things I had always wanted to do when I was a kid. And also I kind of also lean on the anime side, so
Okay.
that also helps.
That's nice.
I also like to watch anime as well when I get a chance. And yeah, and I'm still learning how to take time off, like how to like some activities, learn new hobbies. So some once in a while I do something that is not related to what I usually do to try and get me out of that comfort zone. So it's yeah, it's a work in progress, I'll say.
That's nice. Now let's talk a little bit about, community building and mentorship. How would you say that has been a very pivotal factor in your career development, both on you being on the mentor side and also you being on the mentee side, and then being a community? If you could just summarize both of them, because I think they intersect to some extent. So putting all of them together.
Yeah. Not a good question. So
We only ask good questions on
oh
the
yeah, the questions are really good. Like
Texan
it's making me think. That's
podcast.
good. And I'll say it's very important. One of the advices I also give is to get a mentor and also to join a community.
Right.
These two are very, very important in building your career. When people tell me they want to enter tech, those are the two things I tell them to do. And it helps. Sometimes you need to know what you want from the mentor. Sometimes you may not really know what you want. That is also fine. But make sure that you say that beforehand so that the mentor has enough time, they can give it to you. Or if not, they'll have to kind of reschedule time for that. So I'll say it's very important. I'll say also after you have gotten some form of footing in the field you wanted to be in, it's very good to be a mentor as well, because you kind of learn from the upcoming generation, because you can't learn everything, honestly. And you have to also be willing to learn from people who are upcoming with fresh ideas and all that. That's why one of the things I keep saying is that if you're a singer or a musician, I don't know that industry very well, but I feel like those who are helping upcoming musicians have a better chance of staying relevant and being in more in the public eye and more, should I say, keep earning money, because they are investing in the next generation.
Right.
So I see being a mentor as an investment in the next generation, which is very helpful. And also, if you see something, let's say, right now, for instance, I'm in the UX field. I come from a non-tech background, and I have seen that there are hardly a lot of people like me, especially in the Western world. So we have mostly Africans who have to kind of work to become a UX researcher rather than go to school to become a UX researcher. Just a few of them have that opportunity. So I'm currently working with a friend who we can build, that we can build like a community for that. So if you see a problem that you feel like there are not a lot of people who are like you, instead of you just sitting down and just doodling your thumbs, it's good for you to go out and look for those people and create a small community. It doesn't have to be big. It can just be like 5 to 10 people in a WhatsApp group where you guys share ideas, you help each other out. When I started GIS, I just had three guys I used to work with, that when I had issues at work, I just asked them for questions. I just asked them, hey guys, how do you do this? Then they just help me. So having that community, it doesn't need to be big. It just needs to be enough to help you, to give you the right guidance when you need it. Having a mentor who can be in either the field you are interested in, or be in the field you're currently working in, or actually not be in any field, but has a certain life, should I say, pattern that is similar to yours. So someone like me coming from a different background, going to another background, can mentor somebody who is in a similar situation, and I can share my thoughts on how I navigated that. So having a mentor doesn't need to be just one. It can be multiple, but you need to be very specific as to what each mentor is helping you to do. And you have to guide that conversation, especially in the initial stages, to let the mentor know how they can help you. And being a mentee is also helpful. Being a mentor is also helpful in that whilst you start to get your footing, it's very good for you to share those fresh learnings, those fresh ideas that you're getting. So that's why I really like TikTok videos that people share. This is what I learned as an HR. I just left this. Yeah. So those are very, very helpful, because you are helping the upcoming generation to prevent the same mistakes from before. And also you are investing in the next generation and helping to establish yourself as an expert in the field that you are providing mentorship on. So yeah, I think I have covered all three.
You have.
a long answer to all.
A very perfect one for that matter. We're about to conclude, and honestly, I'm sad. I wish podcasts could have 3 hours and just talk for hours, but definitely trying to give our listeners, you know, good quality, but in the shortest amount of time. Let's look, just, you know, a bit of retrospect. If there is, okay, let me rephrase. Let's just look back into time. If there's anything you could have done differently on your journey, what do you think it would be? If you could look back in time and say, you know what, definitely all the things you've done now have brought you where you are. But maybe there's some things that could have, you know, accelerated some things a little bit better. That if you had the chance to control events in your life.
I'll say I would have prevented myself from not taking, should I say, taken steps when I wanted to, like taking that step. Because since I was a kid, I used to be very like closed up. I did not like attention. I did not like being out there. I did not like taking advantages. Like I did not, basically, I remember in junior high, I had the opportunity to be a sports prefect, but I never took that up because I was shy. I was scared of what I could do and what I could not do. I honestly don't even understand why I did not do it. But I felt like after I started getting myself into those leadership roles, I realized that I actually had a knack for it and had a passion for it earlier, but I just used to stop myself. So I'll say that is one thing that I wish I had stopped myself from doing, that is not taking the step that I wanted to take. Because I want to take this step, but I'm scared, I'm shy. So sometimes I say, sometimes we are scared of success. We are scared of what if we do better. People think that sometimes it's thinking about what if we fail. It's really not that sometimes. It's really saying that, okay, what if we do better? What comes after that? What if I become well known? Then what comes after that? Like, yeah, sometimes it's the scare of success that holds us back instead of the fear, instead of the fear of failure.
Right.
So I think that is one thing I would have tried to stop because I feel like I could have done a lot more from when I was way younger, but I kind of stopped myself and started a bit late. But yeah, by God's grace, I'm where I am today because of some of the experiences I've had. And hopefully my story can inspire others.
It sure is inspiring. It's quite unfortunate that we have to end soon, but I always like to end on this note. What exciting things are happening in the UX UI? Any trends, any exciting things that you know of or you're looking forward to? And yeah, share with us. We want to just, you know, be updated about it.
Oh, I think this one everybody knows. That's AI content generation tools. Like, it's all over. Every solution out there is trying to embed AI systems into it to make it more efficient and productive. So if you want to build a product, but one thing I'm a bit scared of is that some products may not necessarily need AI chat tool or something. So I would say an advice to people or product developers out there is that really do research to understand the basic jobs to be done. If indeed those jobs to be done can be improved or enhanced with AI, then embed that. But if not, it's really just a waste of time. You rather kind of irritate a person's experience than improve it. So I think that's one trend that I'll say is upcoming and in full force, and it's all over, that we need to be a bit more careful about. And also responsible tech. Please make sure that you assess your product tools, especially since AI is on the rise with so many issues. You need to really take responsible technology very, very seriously to assess whether or not it will impact people negatively or positively. Yeah.
Sienna, you are a wealth of wisdom. You claim that you have a closed up personality, but it's actually a beautiful personality that just needs the right person like Raymond Cluche to unearth it out. But
true.
Thank you so much for accepting to join the TechServe podcast. I really enjoyed it, and I believe my friends and others who are finding themselves at that space of whether it be geography, psychology, research development, or whichever career, but then thinking of getting UX research and hopefully working in Microsoft. I'm just looking forward to someone saying, I listened to your episode and I found myself working with Sienna. That would be the highlight for me on the TechServe podcast.
That would be so cool.
Yeah, but thank you. Thank you so much for coming. I really enjoyed this conversation with you. Sienna Williams' diverse background in psychology, geography, and resource development has enabled her to pivot successfully into UX research. She reminds us that difficult isn't impossible, and we should all be in the driver's seat of our careers. Thank you for listening to today's episode of the TechServe podcast. See you in the next episode.